Good morning, you guys. It's been a weird couple of months. Weird few weeks, weird few days. And in the future, Nathan and I will compare notes. But because we are going live on Facebook, there's going to be a little bit of overlap from what Nathan said in the intro and what I'm going to say in the sermon. But I think it's good for us to hear it twice. I also want to warn you against, I think sometimes what happens when we start to hear familiar stories, especially during hard times, we just kind of tune out. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, is that feeling of when we just have had enough and we just tune out. So this is how the story ended last week. God dealt with the midwives. The people multiplied and they became very strong. Because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. Then Pharaoh commanded all of his people, "Every boy that is born to the Hebrews, you shall throw into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live." That's where we left off. The passage that Janella read was about two daughters. They are the heroes in this story. Eventually, we're going to get to their two ways of being heroes and how that informs our choices of how to be heroes as well. But I just want to talk about how we came to think about Exodus for the last few weeks. Heroes for hard times. They come in all forms. Today, we're remembering dads whose tenderheartedness and self-sacrifice changes the world. It's a significant opportunity to love the children in your life well and to teach them to do the same. And I'm grateful for all of the fathers I know who love their children and all of our children like this. So here's a seamless transition. Speaking of men, I wanted to admit that I chose these passages from Exodus a long time ago. Genesis is the first book of the Bible, and it's about the patriarchs. It's about the men who are the fathers of the Hebrew people. They're the main characters of Genesis and throughout the Old Testament. You may even notice that we count time by these men in the form of genealogies. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and his years were so many years. And Isaac was the father of Jacob, and his years were so many years, and so on. The beginning of the book of Exodus is the same. It lists all the men who moved to Egypt with Joseph. And then it says, Pharaoh commanded, kill all the baby boys. So we've had all of these chapters of the patriarchs and the men, thousands of years. Pharaoh knows what he's doing. He's robbing them of their future. It's through the men of the family that their heritage has been traced historically. Their property has been passed down, and it's how the next generation identifies themselves. So it's striking that the next two chapters are only women's stories. This is why I chose these passages. We see such a dramatic shift from the male-centric story to all women in these two chapters because the boys are in trouble. Today, the young girl in the story was probably Janella's age, which is why I was so glad she got to read the scripture. Just imagine, right? The point is that heroes for hard times can be anyone, and should be anyone, and it can be you. And it can be you, Janella. We all go through hard times, and we need different heroes for those different hard times. So I chose Exodus 1 and 2 to elevate the stories of these women and shift us away from this idea of a Superman type hero exclusively. But since I chose these passages, on May 5th is when I picked the passages, emailed Nathan, and wrote my outlines. That same day, the footage of Ahmaud Arbery's murder was leaked and flooded social media. Since then, we have been bombarded with injustice and conflict and protests and violence, and it's endlessly in the news. So it's not lost on me that these stories from Exodus are steeped in meaning for the African American community. Come Down Moses is a spiritual that grew out of the connection from enslaved peoples who felt that God needed to miraculously rescue them from oppression and forced labor. Nathan mentioned that slave owning was common and still is common around the world. Many of these slave owning people in America profess to be Christians, and we can make excuses for them, like it's just the way of the world. But I often think about how the slave owners would cut out large chunks of the Bible before giving the slaves a copy. They cut out the entire book of Exodus. They would also cut out any places in the Old or New Testament that showed how God rescues and seeks justice for the oppressed. And at that point, I'm not even sure what is left of Jesus' story. God stands with the oppressed, always has, and always will. The Exodus story is this story. It's the story of Jesus, and the story is a promise to all oppressed and suffering people that God hears your cry. The author Howard Thurman says that people understand the message of Jesus when their backs are up against the wall, when they don't have very many options. And in the same vein, Jesus said that it's very challenging for a wealthy or privileged person to understand the kingdom of God. Why? Not because of their money, but because of their perspective. Outsiders, underdogs, the least of these, they are able to understand the work of Jesus on a soul, day-to-day level. Jesus is continually telling us that we must become like children. We must become like servants. And in the Gospel of Luke, blessed are the poor, for they will inherit the earth. Jesus invites us to humble ourselves because we are all children of God. And God does not take kindly to anyone abusing his children. This is one of those times where you have to remind yourself to tune back in, right? All of human history is a timeline of one group abusing another group. And we all know this. The Black community knows this. Immigrant families know this. Native Americans know this. Anyone who has suffered violence, the underpaid workers, our neglected children, our queer family members, and our differently capable family members, as well as any of us who find ourselves without the financial or relational means to live lives of dignity. The Exodus story is their story. God sees you, God hears your cry, and Jesus elevates the cause of the unheard and the unseen. We jumped into the deep end this morning, right? But I just needed to name out loud the subtext that we've all been living in, especially as we're reading these Exodus stories. And so for another seamless transition, speaking of deep end, let's talk about the Nile. The Nile River runs through the heart of Egypt. If you look at it on an aerial map, it looks like a bright green fruit by the foot against a sand-colored table. it's a desert. And then there's this very narrow strip of land that's lush and green and very fertile. It's an oasis. Once a year, the Nile River would flood, and it would refresh the land, leaving fantastic topsoil for farming. Egyptian lives revolved around the river. It's fresh water, so everyone would settle there at the river's edge. Daily, you have to travel to the Nile to get your drinking water for yourself and any of your animals. You bathe in the Nile. The Egyptians, they were also very spiritual people. Their religious stories and practices revolved around the gods they believed were part of the Nile River. It was their life source. The ancient Egyptians called the Nile the father of life and the mother of all men. But Pharaoh commanded his people, "Every boy that is born to the Hebrews, you shall throw into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live." Does that make you feel differently about the Nile? As a Hebrew woman, how do you escape? How do you escape the horrific loss of your child when multiple times a day you are being reminded? First comes the grief, but as time goes on, you cannot escape the memory. You might have experiences of hypervigilance, or sleeplessness, or outbursts of emotion, and then, as I talked about, just an apathy towards life. Like, I can't take in anymore. These are all symptoms of post-traumatic stress. And it's very commonly talked about among veterans. But you know who else can have post-traumatic stress? It's anyone who suffers trauma. Victims or almost victims of violence. We also know that caregivers and loved ones will also suffer psychological distress. As constant witnesses to suffering and violence, a teacher, a parent, a neighbor, a counselor, a friend, a pastor, we all reach our breaking point of feeling helpless and hopeless from the weight of it all. Over time, every young Hebrew family experienced this tragedy. And if you didn't lose a child to Pharaoh's law, you knew someone who did. Last week we talked about heroes versus headlines, remember? Joseph dead, everyone enslaved. Remember that? The headlines are tailored explicitly to shock and to sell. And what this does for us is it acts like the Nile River. It's an inescapable reminder of trauma that has already happened and continues to happen. The river in the Egyptian life was a vibrant sign of life and fertility. But to the Hebrew community, it was a mass grave. And after a while, with grief after grief, you become numb. You get tired of it all. We all get tired. And at some point, there's nothing else you can absorb. There's nothing else you can mentally take in if you want to continue to live. Because someone has to go get water, and eventually, you have to bathe. So for today's story, it was Moses' mother who was fighting so hard to avoid this exact tragedy. She had delayed the inevitable as long as she could. She hid him for 3 months, and before all of her choices were taken away from her, she crafted him a tiny basket boat. We aren't sure of the state of her mind at this point. She may have been numb from grieving up until the point where she found out she was pregnant to when she gave birth. also, what we do know is that a mother doesn't put a child in a river unless it's the last resort. His life was in God's hands. So Janella read the story of Miriam and Pharaoh's daughter. And the law read, as we've heard so many times, throw all the baby boys into the Nile, but let the daughters live. These two daughters were as different as could be. One was a grown princess, the other was a Hebrew girl. One was cautious, and one was carefree. But they had one thing in common. They were all tired of seeing death where they should have found life. So thank you for allowing me to go so far into what we've been experiencing over the past couple weeks. We've all been through a lot, and so I want to keep the main point of this sermon short and simple. There are two daughters, and for us, these can represent two different ways to be heroes for hard times. First, Miriam. Miriam followed the river. She was tired of the senseless loss, and so she followed where the river would lead to see what was there. We might be tempted to invite everyone to look at the river, to unfriend the river, to shout upstream until we can't speak anymore. But if we want to effect real change, we can, like Miriam did, drop everything and follow the river to wherever it leads. While she followed the river, she came across her opportunity. In a moment of pressure, Miriam was quick on her feet and clever. She found a clever solution to save Moses' life, to help the princess save Moses' life. And, as an unexpected bonus, her mother got paid, just for being his mother. If you don't have power, you have to be clever. Miriam went to the source and thought of a clever solution. And it might seem like just a small drop in the bucket, that one child's life. But we know from knowing the story of Exodus that God heard the cry of the oppressed and used young Miriam's ingenuity to save the entire people group. So for us, following the river might look like you could drop everything and you can run for local public office. You could become a lawyer. You could found a group that needs to exist. Only you know the need that you see. You could start an essential business and pay your workers well. But whatever the problem is, track it down and find a good solution. This is an excellent option for any of us who have recently found ourselves with more time on our hands than we expected. We have an opportunity to rethink where we want to put our energy. But also for many of us, we have children and fixed responsibilities. So for that, I offer option number two. As the princess, you probably have a lot of time for bathing. It seems from this story that this evil law had been in effect for quite some time. And in order to keep this PG, what I'm going to say is, for those of us who frequent the water, we are numb to horror. Nothing awful is surprising. You know what is surprising? It is remarkable to find a baby alive when you expect to find something worse. The princess found a baby that was alive. There's still hope for this one. She had compassion and she lifted him out of the water. She took it upon herself to adopt him and to love him and to financially provide for him. So for those of us who can't uproot our lives and follow the stream to the source of the problem, here's what our options look like. We look around and we look for signs of life. We look for signs of life, and that's where we invest our time and our energy and our anger and our frustration in keeping those things alive. At Edgewood Church, this is our model, right? We look around for someone who is doing something right or has a great idea, and you see if you can help them do it. We can support new life in our world by looking and nourishing the life that springs up. And we don't have to do it all by ourselves. So our options are to give generously, to be encouraging, and to help people make meaningful connections. So I've been encouraged through all this upheaval as I'm seeing these people who are following the river and finding really good solutions to some ingrained, hard problems. And I can't dream up these solutions, but I can support them in their work and tell them what I think they're doing is worth doing and to keep doing it. So this is the last thing I want to say. I want to remind us that we're all in some period of transition, and we're all going through more than meets the eye. So if you need to be pointed in a good direction because you just don't have the emotional energy to figure out what to do, there are lots of good ways that you can plug in and serve your community. We've been building bridges and connecting people and learning from each other for almost 10 years now. And in all of that, we've learned that none of us can do it alone, and none of us will ever do it perfectly. But that's why there are so many of us. Together, we can find ways to be heroes for each other and for our community, just like these two daughters. Because our job in this hard time is to remind our community that God has not forgotten them, that God hears their cries, and God will deliver us from our oppression. Thank you. This is our time of response. So I'm going to pray, and then just use this time during the music to reflect on the ways that you can serve your community. Or if you have time and resources, maybe you commit yourself to following the stream where it leads, not just shouting upriver. But we all have something to give. And it's really hard when we're so inundated with the bad news all the time. But we are good news people. That's what the gospel means.